So we are in the sixth chapter, Dhyana Yoga. Bhagwan Shri Krishna, after giving us the technique of meditation, how to sit, how to control the mind, and how to connect with the self within, then last week, so after telling us about the technique of meditation, last week Bhagwan gave us a warning that one who sleeps too much, one who eats too much, one who does not sleep, one who does not eat, such a person who lives in the extremes of life cannot meditate very well. Today, the first shloka will continue that topic. And then after that, the next few shlokas, today and next time in 2 weeks when we meet, will tell us about the benefits of meditation. What happens when you regularly meditate? Beautiful shlokas. So we'll start with shloka number 17. Chapter 6, shloka 17. Yuktahara viharasya.
Yuktahara viharasya.
Yukta cheshtasya karmasu.
Yukta cheshtasya karmasu.
Yukta swapnavabodhasya.
Yukta swapnavabodhasya.
Yogo bhavati dukkha.
Yogo bhavati dukkha.
So together, yukta hara viharasya, yukta cheshtasya karmasu, yukta swapnavabodhasya, yogo bhavati dukkha. So in the 17th shloka,
Chapter six,
and yoga 7, shloka 17. 17.
Yeah.
So yukta ahara viharasya. Yukta means the right amount or moderate, moderation. Yukta means moderation, the right amount. Ahara viharasya, diet, ahar, and vihara. Vihara means travel, enjoyment. So one should be moderate in diet and in travel, in enjoyment. Yukta cheshtasya karmasu. And even in our activities, even in our work, we should be moderate. And then yukta swapna avabodhasya. Swapna avabodha means sleep and waking. But here, Gurudev gives us another meaning of what is swapna and avabodha. We'll talk about that person. And yogaha bhavati dukkha. That yoga, one who practices dhyana yoga, that technique of living and meditating, he will have dukkha ha. Ha means destruction. So destruction of sorrow. So everybody here wants to not have sorrow. So Bhagwan gives us very good method. So ahara we think as diet, but not only food, but intake through all our senses, overindulging in eating, in seeing, hearing, making the mind more extrovert. So the person who does too much of overindulgence makes his or her mind extrovert. That Bhagwan says is not good. And also too much introvert, where I have almost like a depression or a withdrawal from the world, should not be there. One should engage with the world in a moderate way. And slowly when that vairagya comes, then, slowly that is okay to withdraw from the world. So intake is, as we said, from all the senses, sense organs, and also the organs of action. Too much activity with my hands, with my legs, constantly busy, unnecessarily making myself over busy, talking too much, You know, all those things, so should be in moderation. And vihara means travel. So people think after retirement, I'm just going to travel. I met one person recently, about a year ago, and he had just retired. I told him, what are you going to do? Oh, I'm going to have a lot of fun. So I said, what kind of fun? Well, I'll go to the gym 7 days a week and spend 2 hours in the gym. Then I'll go home, you know, read the news, have lunch, and then have a nice long nap. In the evening, maybe I'll go for a walk or just go to the internet and sleep. And then every 3-4 months, I'm going to take a trip. Okay, I'm going to go to Europe. And even Europe now, they are finding Eastern Europe and Estonia and Lithuania and all those countries we had never heard of, people are going, or, you know, Laos, Cambodia, running mindlessly from city to city, country to country. Not that travel is bad. Travel is good for relaxation and to widen our horizons. But if after retirement, that's all I'm going to do, travel, go to the gym, enjoy sleep. Now, where is the time for God? You know, I asked him, where is it? And he was a little taken aback. So that's why Bhagavan says, do everything in moderation. Yeah, some travel is good. Some, you know, relaxation is good. Gym is good. But take out time for God. You know, take out time for my self-improvement. We do a lot of things for mind improvement, you know, 7 habits of 7 successful people and all those things. But how am I going to work for my soul, you know, my atma, the self, not the self, but the mind and intellect, the subtle body? How am I going to connect that to Bhagwan? That should become our main goal as we retire or as we get closer to retirement. Work is good, you know, nothing wrong with work. But as we withdraw, as we retire, less time in work and more time for God, more time for knowledge, more time for bhakti, to do some puja, read the Bhagavad Gita, you know, listen to discourses. In Chinmaya channel, we have, you know, discourses by so many Mahatmas. So that, and also overwork, you know, some people think karma is service. So they will work 14 hours, 16 hours a day, 18, barely sleep. Even that is not good. Yes, if your work requires some short periods of intense activity, it is good. But even there, I should take some time off. If I have my own business, take some vacation time, spend some time with children, grandchildren. So travel, work, everything. And even sleep, as we had talked last week, should be moderate. Neither oversleep, you know, till 11 o'clock in the morning, or not sleep at all, you know, go to bed at midnight, wake up at 4 o'clock to meditate. So both of them extremes. And waking. So Gurudev in his commentary talks about swapna and avabodha. Sleep he calls as non-apprehension, where in sleep I don't perceive the world, I don't see anything. And the dream he calls misapprehension, that in the dream I create my own world. And then we think the waking is the real world. But Bhagavan tells us, and Gurudev tells us, even this world that we are in, even though we think it is very real, for us now it looks very real, and we feel that this is the most important thing, to work in the world and take care of my activities. But the main message of Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads is that our goal of life is to wake up to this Om, this consciousness. We don't have that. But to wake up to the consciousness, the Atma, the Self, So slowly shift our attention from the deep sleep to the dream to the waking, and then to that higher state of awakening which all these great Mahatmas live in. Shankaracharya ji, Puja Gurudev Swami, Chinmayananda, Ramakrishna Paramhans, Swami Vivekananda. So all these great masters live in that world of awakening. That's why Ramakrishna Paramhans said that I see God more clearly than I see the world. For him, he always lived in that state of abidance with the Mother Goddess, where even while doing puja, he, instead of putting a garland on the mother, he would put a garland on himself. He was a pujari in the temple, and people thought he was a madman, but he saw no difference between me and that God, goddess, you know, the oneness. So that is the higher state of awakening, which these masters wake up to, and which the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads direct us to do that. So the idea is to see God as non-dual, that there are not two, me and God. God alone is everything. Brahman alone is everything. And I am not separate, because when God is everything, how can I be separate? Not only I, but everybody in this world is one with that God. And such a person who lives such a life, for that you need to do sadhana. It's not going to happen overnight. We need to do some bhakti, some karma yoga, some service, some charitable giving, and regular meditation. So all these things, when we do, then slowly our mind progresses closer to God. And when we ask people what is joy and what is sorrow, so people say getting is joy and giving is sorrow. You know, that is the standard thinking, that if I have to give, if I have to do some charity, if I have to share, that is sorrow. They say, no, sharing is joy. Once you start enjoying that joy of giving, of sharing, then you realize that is the true benefit. And keeping for myself, Bhagwan says in the earlier chapters, tena evasa, one who earns for himself and just keeps for himself and does not share with others is considered a thief. So when we do this regular meditation, when we do bhakti, pray to Lord regularly, do karma yoga, share, then these habits become a shock absorber. So a person who regularly meditates and is all the time connected with God and he lives a life of service, giving, praying regularly, meditating, then his mind becomes so established in God that the world cannot give it shocks. See, like when we travel in India, you know, and the cars are a little old and then the streets are broken and very bumpy. So constantly you get the shocks. But if the car has a strong shock absorber, then even the greatest shock of the ground cannot affect the individual within. So the purpose of studying Bhagavad Gita and applying this knowledge and practicing the sadhanas that are taught in the Bhagavad Gita, as we said, doing service, doing bhakti prayer, working with others, sacrificing my individual goal and seeing what is good for society. So when we do all that, then our mind develops this state of ability to withdraw the shocks. Later on, Bhagwan will tell in the later shloka, yasmin sthito na dukhe na gurunapi vichalyate. One who is established firmly in the knowledge and connected with Bhagwan within, then that knowledge and that connection gives him so much strength that no matter how many problems the world throw at such a person is not affected. Of course, we know the example of Tukaram and Mirabai and Jesus. so many saints had so many problems in life. Even Swami Chinmayananda, when he started teaching this knowledge, you know, some of the pundits opposed him, that you are teaching this knowledge in Sanskrit. You know, no, not in Sanskrit. You're teaching in English, which is a foreign language. You should teach in Sanskrit. And if you don't, then you will suffer. You will be punished. You will have sin. They cursed him, you know, those pundits. And Gurudev said, okay, teach in Sanskrit. He recites a Sanskrit shloka. He said, do you know the meaning? He said, no, we don't know the meaning. He says, if you are pundits, you don't know the meaning. How do you expect the common people to understand if I only talk in Sanskrit? He says, and then he said, okay, talk in Malayalam, you know, Telugu. He says, okay, Malayalam, small part of India, Kerala will understand, or in Telugu or in Tamil, you know, different small parts of India will. How about for the whole of India? How about the whole of the world? My goal is to make Hindus better Hindus and to spread this knowledge, and which he did. And now we see there are more than 300 centers where this knowledge is being taught throughout the world in all the major countries. So that is the benefit of studying this knowledge. And it is our duty not only to study, but to practice it in our life and to spread this knowledge. So from 18th shloka onwards, Bhagwan Shri Krishna in the 6th chapter, 18th shloka onwards, talks about the benefits of meditation. So 5 or 6 shlokas, what happens when we regularly meditate and what is the benefit of meditation. So number 18, chapter 6, number 18. Yeah, if you have a phone, you can also look up the shloka, chapter 6, number 18. Or if you have the book, please read it. So number 18. Yada viniyatam chittam.
Yada viniyatam chittam.
Atmanyevavatishtate.
Atmanyevavatishtate.
Nispruha sarva kamebhyah.
Nispruha sarva kamebhyah.
Yukta ityuchyate tada.
Yukta
together, yada viniyatam chittam. Together, together. No, don't repeat. We'll chant together. Together. Yada viniyatam chittam. Atmanyevavatishtate. Nispruha sarva kamebhyah. Yukta ityuchyate tada. So yada and tada, often in the Bhagavad Gita, they use these words, yada and tada or yatra and tatra. So yada means when. Viniyatam chittam. Chittman means the mind. Niyatam means controlled. Viniyatam means completely controlled. So the goal of meditation is to completely control the mind. When I'm sitting for meditation, let my mind not wander into the world outside. And where do I station? Because the mind needs something to think. It says station the mind in the self, in Bhagwan's presence within. Bhagwan is everywhere in everything, and within us, he is the Atma, the self, the life principle, what they call consciousness. So God that is everywhere, when, and God is also within me, he is the closest to me. Yes, God is in the temple, he is in my puja room, he is in the church, mosque. But God that is within me is my closest. So once the mind is controlled, then Atmani eva avatishtate, then stays in Atma alone, the self, the consciousness. Then what happens to such a person? Nispruha sarva kamebhya. So sarva kamebhya, all desires. Nispruha means he has no longing. See, one is having desires is okay. But when you are longing, brooding, what is the meaning? We'll talk about that. So such a person, yukta iti uchyate tada. Such a person is said to be united, said to be connected with God, connected with the self. So mind which is controlled, connected with God within, then he said to be free from longing and yukta and one with the totality. So controlled, people think, oh, control. I don't want to control the mind. You know, I want to, whatever I feel like doing, I must do. That is freedom. So what I feel like doing is freedom. But Gurudev says, not doing what you feel like doing is freedom. That's something that is taking me away from my spiritual goal, but I still do it, then you are a slave. But not doing what my mind says I must do, but what my intellect, my knowledge says, or the scriptures say, that spending time in God, in thinking of God, in meditating upon God, and reducing my overactivity in the world. We had talked in the previous shloka also, overindulging, overenjoying, over-traveling. So desires, we are not saying that you shouldn't have desires. Of course, you need a house, you need some money for retirement, you need a car, you need those things, clothes, food and all. But overindulging in those or having a longing that, oh, I wish I had it. I wish I had something that I don't have. So my neighbor has. Oh, I wish I must have it. So this longing and constant brooding upon it, on objects, it can be an object. I must have this object. I must buy this. Even if I can't afford it, I go take a loan and buy it. And then a problem making payments. My house is comfortable, but my neighbor has a bigger house. So I buy a bigger and bigger house, take a mortgage, which I can't afford to pay. So that is longing. That is overindulging in things that you don't really need. So having this idea that I must have it is wrong. And I must have it regardless of the cost. If I have to cheat others, if I have to step on others, I have to stab people in the back. It can be a job check. It can be a person. I must have this person, or a job or a position. I need this position in the company. And I have to stab the back of my competitors and make the manager think I am the best. That is all sin. That is all harmful. So they say that we have two tapes. You know, we have two tape recorders in our brain. So tape recorder, what is that? You know, we haven't used it in 10, 15, 20 years. But we all know that there was this cassette tape. So we in our mind have two cassette tapes constantly playing. One says, you know, you should get up in the morning, you should meditate, do some puja, do some service, do some reading of the Bhagavad Gita. So I get up in the morning and I sit for meditation. And then the other voice says, Are kya, why are you up so early, 6 o'clock? It's a time to sleep. Look, it's dark outside. You say, well, it's daylight. Doesn't matter. It is too early. Only foolish people get up there, go back to sleep, maybe half an hour more, you know, a lot like that. Or if I have to do, I volunteer to do community service. You say, I'm going to the Chinmaya mission. I have to clean. I have to do this. I decide to go. And then the other tape recorder said, Are, why are you alone going? What about the others? Nobody else is going. Why are you foolishly wasting? This is Sunday, you know, go play golf or go for a picnic or go for a movie. So we have these two tape recorders playing. One is what I should do and one is what we feel like doing, what will give me fun. Yeah, again, no doubt that we should not on Sunday not relax and do those things. But if I have decided that I'm going to get up in the morning to meditate, if I'm going to do puja, if I'm going to do service, then I should keep my that. So you have to make that left side of the monitor, the recorder that is telling me what is right. And this knowledge comes from where? Comes from Bhagavad Gita, comes from the gurus, comes from Swami Chinmayananda. So using this knowledge, we should progress in this spiritual path. And Buddha said in one place that we are all puppets. So we say, why are we puppets? You know, we are free. He says, but what happens in a puppet show? You go and there is this puppeteer and he's controlling the hands, moving the hands, legs, and making him talk. He's, of course, talking, but in different voice for different puppets. And the puppet has no freedom of its own. You know, it just does what the master tells. But our puppet is not a person. It is our desires. Our desires, I must do this, I must have this, I must enjoy. And so all our life is spent in that. And then we don't have time for God, as we said. Where is the time for God? Where is the time to improve yourself to get this knowledge? And then what do? We run towards what we like, run away from what we dislike. And our mind is all the time raga, dvesha, running here, running away from here, running towards, and we are not in control of our own life. We let the desires control us. So one example I was thinking about, say, no, they're having these Waymo and these driverless cars. If you have gone to San Francisco, you must have seen them. And even Tesla and all are coming up with these driverless cars. So you buy a driverless car and, you know, you park it in your garage. And, you know, you're supposed to ride in the car and, you know, make sure that your hands are ready to control the car and not let it. And suppose one morning the software, there is some glitch, you know, software can always have. So your car, what does it do? Itself, it opens the garage door and then the car just takes off. There is no driver, there is nothing. And there is no one to tell the car where to go, where not to go. And it goes through red light. You know, all the software is not working, goes through red lights and you know, creates all chaos. So same way, our mind, when it loses the control and the discrimination of what I should and should not do, then our mind is all the time running. And then we have chaos, just as this car that is running without going through red lights will have accidents, will have problems, could hurt somebody else, could even, you know, get destroyed itself. So same way you and I, when we let our emotions, our desires control us and become the puppeteer, then what happens? Then I have conflicts with others. Just as the car can have an accident, I will have accident in the sense that somebody has something and I say, I want it, and I want it at all costs. So then I lie, I cheat, I, you know, do whatever I can to get what I don't have, or what I even don't even deserve. I don't deserve it, but I want it. See this, even Mahatma Gandhiji said that there is enough in the world for everyone's needs, but not enough for even one man's greed. So we have so much greed, so much selfishness that I just live for me, myself, and I. I don't care what happens to the rest of the world, just as this car, which is going crazy, doesn't care about other traffic. So same way you and I, when we let our desires control us, then we become like that car, driverless car. But if I live my life the way the Bhagavad Gita has taught us, the way Upanishads have taught us, the way Bhagavan Krishna, Puja Gurudev have taught us, then we live a life of self-control. Then our car goes in the right direction. We don't crash with others. We don't hurt others. We love, live with love and sharing. And seeing myself in all. See, that is the message of the whole Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita, that it is non-dual. It is one God alone expressing as all, everybody. So when I see God in everybody, then how can I harm somebody? How can I cheat somebody? How can I be mean or arrogant or hatred? Everyone is an expression of God. So that is the way to live. where you see oneness. I alone am in a ball. I means as God, everybody is me, everybody is one, and that's how these Mahatmas live. They always live. The whole message of Bhagavad Gita and Upanishad is Advait, that there are no two. It's not two. I and all are one. To see that oneness in all, to see that the one total is expressing. And then such a person, his mind doesn't leak out. Otherwise, our mind, if it's not in control, then it leaks out through the senses. Oh, I spend all my time in watching TV or internet, hearing some gossip, talking to people, unnecessarily talking too much, running around, travel, we talked about. So overindulging, then my mind is always leaking out into the senses, into the organs of action, always running outside. Where is the time to sit quietly and contemplate upon God, the God who is within me, that following the inner directions, what they call as conscience, or what they call as Atma or Om or consciousness. So living my life for all, not only for me, myself, and I, not being selfish, but what I can give. You know, John F. Kennedy even said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. So what I can give to others, what I can do for others, and then such a person, Atmani Eva Tishthate, he lives in Atma alone. Atma means self, or God's presence within. So that alone is his goal of life, that my goal in this life is to reach God, to know God, God who is within me as my true self, my nature. So one who lives his or her life dedicated to God, serving God, even when he's helping somebody else or she is helping somebody else, it is not with the idea that I am so great, I am doing it, I am so powerful, wonderful. God is working through me. God is helping this person. So there is no doership. There is no selfishness. There is no I, me, and my. God alone is everything. And then seeing God in everybody and seeing God in myself doing everything. So when you do that, then your actions automatically become pure. When I'm serving God, how can I be, you know, hateful to that person? How can I be violent? And if God is working through me, then my actions become pure. That's why they say, remember God when you get up in the morning, get up chanting Bhagavan's name, you know, remember him throughout the day. After the shower, thank God for the warm, clean, plentiful water. That is the best time because, you know, we are so blessed in this country to have all the comforts of the world. So seeing God everywhere and living with God constantly, then throughout the day, whatever I'm doing, God is working through me. And before you go to bed at night, lie down and just chant the name of the Lord, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and so on. So constantly remembering God, then Ishwaramaya, my zindagi becomes, my life becomes Ishwaramaya. It is full of Ishwara, not full of desires. So that is called Atmani Eva Tishthati. And such a person who has no longing and excessive desires, Yukta, his mind and intellect are connected. And they are always connected with God. So this person lives his or her life connected with God. And that is the glory of this knowledge. So the one who meditates regularly and practices all the teachings that we have heard in the scriptures, then such a person is said to be Yukta. Yukta means connected, connected with God. Now we'll do shloka number 19, chapter 6, shloka 19. Bhagavan is given a very beautiful example, wonderful, which makes this entire teaching so clear. If this one shloka, if you apply in your meditation, that's all you need to do. So number 19, yatha dipo nivatastha.
Yatha dipo nivatastha.
Nengate sopama smritha.
Nengate sopama smritha.
Yogino yata chittasya.
Yogino yata chittasya.
Yunjato yogam atmanah.
Yunjato yoga atmanah.
All chant together. Yatha dipo nivatastah. Ningate sopama smrita. Yogino yata chittasya. Yunjato yogam atmanah. So beautiful example. Deepa. Deepa means a lamp. Lamp is not the electric light, but the wick, you know, which has the lamp, which they used to light the rooms before they had electricity. So that lamp, you know, which has the glass cover around it. So yatha deepa, just as a deep, yatha and then tatha. Yatha means just as a deepa, a lamp, divatastha. Divata means there is no wind. So there is a lamp and there is no breeze, there is no wind. Stha means it is station. So when you place the lamp in a windless place where there is no wind disturbing, na ingate, it does not flicker, does not move. So upama smrita, that is the example, Bhagavan says. That is the example that I wish you to think about, where a lamp is in a place where there is no wind, there is no breeze. So same way, yogi naha yata chittasya, and a yogi, dhyan yogi, a meditator, when he sits for meditation, his mind is controlled in the same way, like the lamp. Yunjato yoga matmanaha. So a person who is practicing this yoga of the self and connecting his mind with Lord, unmoving, that is the example. So, you know, we know a lamp, right? Where you light a lamp. The olden time, they used to have those glass case around it and with the opening in the top where the air could come, oxygen. So when there is a glass surrounding it, then the lamp is protected. If there is a wind or a breeze, it does not get disturbed. But suppose the glass is not there and we just have like a lamp and then a breeze, like when we are doing aarti and a fan is on or the breeze is coming, then the light goes off. So same way, a lamp which is protected from the breeze. Then what is the second quality of the lamp? Lamp always goes upwards. Lamp never goes downwards. Even if you turn the lamp downwards, the flame will go upwards. So one, it doesn't move. Secondly, it is upward. So same way, when we sit for meditation, our mind should be like that. We should sit and we should meditate. And what is the protection, the glass? Or what is the wind that disturbs, just as the lamp can get disturbed by the breeze? It is our desires which disturb us, which is like the wind. You know, it takes my mind. When I'm sitting for meditation, I'm saying Rama, Rama, Rama. And then I say, you know, Rama Krishna, he borrowed $100 from me, you know, 6 months ago, and he still hasn't returned. So next half an hour, you are meditating on Rama Krishna and the $100 instead of Ram. So the mind is always running because of desires. I lost $100, or I'm, you know, now after meditation, I'm going to go and work and do this. And I have this deal coming up and I'll make a lot of money. So the mind is always diverted outside by these wind of desires, which all the time disturb me, take my mind everywhere, here and there. And what is the glass? Glass is this knowledge that when I sit for meditation, my mind should be on God, should not. So make that protection around your mind so the mind does not wander and does not flicker. See, the lamp, if it is straight, then it won't flicker. And our mind also, instead of being single pointed, it becomes multi pointed. Thinking of this, thinking of that. What am I going to eat for breakfast after meditation? What did she say yesterday? And then today, when I see her, I'm going to give it back to her. So our mind is all the time thinking about the whole world. So the mind should be controlled. Then it should go upwards. See, the lamp goes upwards. So the mind should go upwards means, where is God? Even though God is everywhere, but when we say, oh God, we always look up. We don't look down and say, oh God. Even though God is down there too, but we always think of God as higher, higher power. Even within us, God is the one that is controlling my mind and intellect. Like in a company, the CEO, his office may be on the ground floor. You know, he has a corner office with a view of the garden. And even the guy on the eighth floor says, you know, that Lord, the CEO, who is the highest, higher up. Even though his office is on the eighth floor, he and the CEO is on the ground floor, but CEO is up, you know, and the ordinary employee is down. So he looks up to that. So that is called moving upward. Then, even within, as I said, the Lord's presence is powerful. Then it says that thoughts, see how now the lamp, the flame, even though it looks as a constant flame, actually, if you analyze, there are thousands of flames appearing as one. It's a lot of activity going on, but appears as one flame. So same way in our mind, even though we think mind is one, there are thousands of flickering thoughts coming one after the other. And so the mind is never able to be controlled, never able to stay on God. And so that is the yogi, you know, his life is like that. And it says the person's mind should be focused on the highest knowledge. And for that, you need the proper knowledge. To focus on the highest knowledge. So reading the Bhagavad Gita, listening to Puja Gurudev's commentaries, you know, Shankaracharya Ji's teachings. So having the right knowledge and applying it at the right time is very important. So I'll end with a beautiful story of Einstein. I think I told that a few years ago, but most of you probably don't, haven't heard it or don't remember. So Einstein, when he just newly discovered the theory of relativity, he became was becoming famous. He had not yet become world famous, but you know, slowly the people who were reading the journals recognized that this is a masterful theory of Einstein. And so this, and nobody knew about this theory. It was so new. So they used to invite him to their town to give a talk on relativity, on this theory, and then the people would ask questions. And so slowly he started getting well known. So, you know, during the week, 2-3 times, he would be driving to the nearest town or the nearest, and then the next city, and one from one city to another and all that. So, and he had a chauffeur who was very devoted to him and took him everywhere. And he was all the time one chauffeur driving him wherever they had to stay the night. The chauffeur would also stay. So one day Einstein is driving and he tells his chauffeur, I'm tired. Sir, what are you tired? I go to all these meetings and you know all I have to talk the same thing. And then the people ask me the same question and I have to answer them. I am just tired of this. You know, sometimes you get, you know, overstretched everywhere. Now, they were going to this town where nobody had seen Einstein before. Nobody knew him. He said, yeah, nobody knows me there. And then, you know, I just have to. So the chauffeur says, sir, I have an idea. So he says, what? He says, "Sir, I have listened to this talk of yours more than 30 times, you know, all the cities. And nobody knows you there, right?" No. He said, "Okay, I can deliver the talk for you. It is the same talk you deliver everywhere. And the people ask the same questions. I'll answer them." So Mr. Sai said, "That's a good idea, you know. So at least one day I'll get a break." So they exchange their coat. So he gives his fancy coat and hat to the driver, makes him sit in the back, and Einstein is driving like a chauffeur, putting on chauffeur's cap and jacket, and they drive into the town and go to that meeting hall, and everybody is welcoming the chauffeur. "Oh, sir, please come." They think he's Einstein. And Einstein sits in the back in the audience, and the chauffeur is there, and he delivers a beautiful talk. Everybody claps, and they ask questions. Beautiful questions, he answers very well. And then it so happens that there is a professor there in the audience, and he wanted to show his knowledge. See, sometimes people don't ask questions because they want to know, but they want to show how much I know. So he lengthy, you know, and the question is longer than the answer sometimes. So long question he asked. You know, this is the theory, this is it, this is it, then why is this? And very, very complicated question, which was very difficult. Now, he was, and the scientist was quite smart, so his question was difficult to answer. And the chauffeur got lost. He said, "I don't know the answer to this question. All the others I have heard, this is a new one." So he thinks for a while and he says, "You know what? This question is so easy, even my chauffeur sitting in the back can answer." So Einstein gets up and answers. Of course, he knew the answer. So that is called having the right knowledge and then knowing where to apply the knowledge and where to know what is my limitation. So that's the idea of the Bhagavad Gita and the scriptures. And listening to commentaries, reading Swami Chinmayananda's commentary and all, that it gives me the right knowledge, how to apply the knowledge at the right time, and to know my limitations. So if I reach something where I don't understand, but thinking, it's okay, I know everything. No, one should have the humility that I should go to a guru, go to a teacher who will reveal the knowledge to me. You know, the essence of this knowledge. Superficially, like especially the Bhagavad Gita has so many places where you need a guru, like the lamp example. We wouldn't be able to understand if there was not a guru to explain to us how the lamp is connected to the mind. When I was preparing, I also read a couple of commentaries to see what is the connection with the lamp to the wind, to the glass, you know, and how the lamp goes upwards and, you know, the thoughts. So same way, how our thoughts and desires take away our mind. So a mind which is protected with the right knowledge and directed upwards. So my mind should all the time be thinking of God, God who is not only outside in the temple or the church, but God who is within me as the higher controller. That's why they say God is always higher than everything else. So all the time keeping my mind on God, that's what we say. Not only during meditation, one should do that. When I'm meditating, one should connect our mind with God. But throughout the day, remember that God is within me. God is working through me. So then I have no ego. I have no doership, that I am so great and I am so wonderful. It is God who is giving me this knowledge, God who is working through me. And so seeing God in myself and seeing God in all is the whole purpose of spirituality, what we call Advaita. That's why in the Gita chanting in the beginning, we say in the Gita Dhyana, Advaita Amrita Varshini. So Bhagavad Gita, the mother, is constantly showering us with the grace and the knowledge of Advaita, that there is only one God. Even though they say, oh, in Hinduism, there's so many gods, you know, There's Ram and Krishna and Shiva and Ganpati and Saraswati and how many gods do you have? You know, people ask, or our children when they go to school, other children say, oh, yours is a polytheistic where you believe in what 33 crores, 330 million, 33 crore Devi and Devtas we have. So 330 million gods and goddesses. So how many, whom do you pray to? He said, no, there is only one God, one Brahman, one consciousness. He takes different form. He means it's not even a male. God is that, you know. We say God is worship as that, not as a male or a female. But that consciousness, which is of the nature of energy or illumination or chit, you know, which illumines everything and appears as everything and does everything. So the world is created by God. God has entered the world and God supports the world and nourishes the world. And when it is time for a person to go, also takes God, people away. So that one God who is all pervading takes different forms for us to love and connect with. Somebody said, oh, Bhagwan Shri Krishna is my favorite. I love that. Somebody says, I'm a Ram Bhakta. Somebody says, Shivoham, Shivoham. He meditates on Lord Shiva. So somebody says, Bhagwan Vishnu. He maintains the whole universe. He takes all these dasha avatar and has done so much. So we pick one. And it is okay to pick one devta as my Ishta devta, that one I love, one who is connected with me, whom you can relate. Some people, you know, relate with Shiva because they like to meditate. Some people with Lord Krishna, all the leelas he used to do, or Bhagwan Shri Ram, how he lived an ideal life, even though in a human body. So we may, or a musician, or a writer, he worships Mother Saraswati because she is knowledge. So we worship different forms of God, but we have to understand that this form will lead us to the formless. So this form of Sri Krishna, Sri Ram, Lord Shiva, Mother Saraswati, will actually, their essence is formless. All of them are formless. That's why in Bhagwan Shiva, we see the Shivalinga, which we talked on the Tuesday class. Shivalinga represents the formless aspect of Bhagwan Shiva. So the main essence of all of them is that Atma, the self, the consciousness, Brahman, who is formless. So I should see my God not only in the temple, in the church, in the mosque, in the puja room, but I should see God as everywhere. Everything is sustained by God, supported by God, taken care of by God, and I am also maintained with God. So that the beautiful example of the lamp takes us to this highest knowledge. So today we covered moderation in living, in life, not over indulging, not over traveling, and seeing the substratum, you know, the consciousness as the substratum. And upon that substratum, this world is like a dream, even though the world looks real, but masters tell us it is like a dream. It is a superimposition. And then we saw that how when the mind is controlled and directed to the higher, then it is said to be yukta. When it is free of longing, it is said to be connected with God, and my mind and intellect are connected. And the lamp example, how the lamp directs its energy upward. So you and I should keep our mind always on God, who is higher, who is my controller, my boss. So we'll end here. We have about 10, 15 minutes, 10 minutes or so for questions. So if anybody has questions or comments, anything you would like to add to this?
Hari Om, Anil ji.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was not able to be there and I had something else going on here. So anyway,
no problem.
Thank you very much for today's discourse. So what I learned today is verse number 17th, For a person who is moderate in eating, recreation, work, sleep, and wakefulness, the practice of yoga removes suffering. So Krishna teaches the principle of moderation and balance. That means that a yogi should maintain a harmony in food, physical activity, rest, work, sleep. Too much or too little of anything disturbs the mind and the body, and balanced living creates mental stability, which allows meditation to deepen. So then, verse 18, when a disciplined mind becomes steady and rests in self alone, free from all desires, the person is said to be established in yoga. So this verse pretty much describes the state of true meditation. At this stage, the mind becomes quiet, desires weaken, attention turns inward, and the self becomes the center of awareness. So the mind no longer runs towards external objects, and yoga is achieved when the mind naturally rests in the self. So then the mind of a yogi in meditation is like a flame in the windless place that doesn't flicker. Krishna uses this beautiful metaphor, just like a lamp in windless place burns steadily, the yogi's mind becomes calm, stable, undisturbed, fully concentrated. So the steady awareness is the essence of deep meditation. So when mental disturbances stop, the light of self shines clearly.
Thank you. Thank you. That's good.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll end here.